Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Pauline Cantwell about Agenda 21, something called ICLEI, I-C-L-E-I, and geoengineering. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's a story on the site Activist Post by Charlie McGrath. Welcome to Crazy Town, or perhaps I should say Crazy Nation. The new normal in a crazy nation includes a special forces-style Black Hawk helicopter assault mission, complete with armed troops dangling out the door, ready to get some, or give some, in downtown Chicago. Of course, this was just a practice run to get the Crazy Nation shock troops ready to defend freedom when NATO and a bunch of dignitaries come to town in a few weeks. But looking at some of the other material being purchased for the event, it becomes clear that the real threat is the people. Portable high-security barriers, portable light towers, crowd control barriers, and Black Hawks packed with combat-ready troops. Only in an insane nation can the General Services Administration drop nearly $1 million on a fundraiser, while 46,800,000 people are relying on food stamp assistance to feed themselves. In case you were wondering, the funds wasted on the bash instead could have been used to cover over 100 of those food stamp recipients for nearly 2.5 years. Drone use. Here's another story. Drone use takes off on the home front. Now remember Technion, the Israeli MIT. This is some of the things that they build. $100 million of New York taxpayer money is going in to fund that institution to be built, I believe, on Roosevelt Island. That's coming our way as these stories come out. This is by Andy Pastor and John M. Schwiller. With little public attention, dozens of universities and law enforcement agencies have been given approval by federal aviation regulators to use unmanned aircraft known as drones, according to FOIA documents. The more than 50 institutions that received approvals to operate remotely piloted aircraft are more varied than many outsiders and privacy experts previously knew. Here's another story. California declares war on suburbia. Planners want to herd millions into densely packed urban corridors. It won't save the planet, but will make traffic even worse. By Wendell Cox. It's no secret that California's regulatory and tax climate is driving business investment to other states. California's high cost of living also is driving people away. Since 2000, more than 1.6 million people have fled, and my own research, as well as that of others, points to high housing prices as the principal factor. The exodus is likely to accelerate. California has declared war on the most popular housing choice, the single-family detached home, all in the name of saving the planet. The article continues, the campaign against suburbia is the result of laws passed in 2006, the Global Warming Solutions Act, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and in 2008, the Sustainable Communities and Climate Protection Act on urban planning. The latter law, as the LA Times aptly characterized it, was intended to control suburban sprawl, build homes closer to downtown, and reduce commuter driving, thus decreasing climate-changing greenhouse gas emissions, in short, to discourage automobile use. If the planners have their way, the state's famously unaffordable housing could become even more unaffordable. That was titled California Declares War on Suburbia. And here's another story by George Russell. The tab for the United Nations Rio Summit, trillions per year in taxes, transfers, and price hikes. The upcoming United Nations Environmental Conference on Sustainable Development will consider a breathtaking array of carbon taxes, transfers of trillions of dollars from wealthy countries to poor ones, and new spending programs to guarantee that populations around the world are protected from the effects of the very programs the World Organization wants to implement, according to stunning UN documents examined by Fox News. The main goal of the much-touted Rio Plus 20 United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, scheduled to be held in Brazil from June 20th to the 23rd, and which the Obama administration officials have supported, is to make dramatic, enormously expensive changes in the way that the world does nearly everything, Or, as one of the documents puts it, quote, a fundamental shift in the way we think and act. Among the proposals on how the, quote, challenges can and must be addressed, according to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, more than 2.1 trillion a year in wealth transfers from rich countries to poorer ones in the name of fostering, quote, green infrastructure, climate adaptation, and other green economy measures. New carbon taxes for industrialized countries that would cost about $250 billion a year, or 0.6% of the gross domestic product by 2020. Further unspecified price hikes that extend beyond fossil fuels to anything derived from agriculture, fisheries, forestry, or other kinds of land and water use, all of which would be radically reorganized. These cost changes would, quote, contribute to a more level playing field between established, quote, brown technologies and newer, greener ones. Major global social spending programs, including a, quote, social protection floor and, quote, social safety nets for the world's most vulnerable social groups for reasons of equity. Remember when chemtrails were a conspiracy and anyone who talked about the spray planes were criticized, called delusional, needed to get a life? Then the word geoengineering popped up, and by 2009, the media began to report on how scientists have proposed ways to stabilize climate change or warming of the planet through geoengineering. Then there was the ClimateGate scandal, a major scandal exposing the IPCC scientists involved in monitoring climate data, and they were busted in leaked emails, not hacked, big difference, and it was revealed that they were manipulating years of climate information to make it look as if the planet's climate is warming more than it really is. Talking with our next guest, Pauline Cantwell, a few days ago, she reminded me of a story titled, After Years of Humiliating Setbacks, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and about 60 of his top lieutenants, the top brass of the entire UN system, spent their Labor Day weekend at a remote Austrian alpine retreat, discussing ways to put their sprawling organization in charge of the world's agenda. Well, that's certainly happening right now. Many people who are paying attention are seeing that agenda creeping in through local governments around the country. We talked today about geoengineering a little bit, but in its larger context with the nonprofit organization, which is essentially a global advocacy group seeking to implement a broad range of policies at every level of government. Many towns are selling out to programs within a United Nations scheme called ICLEI. It stands for International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. But that name has already changed. It's obsolete. But in one article on the Freedom Advocates site, it reads that ICLEI uses the false premise and outright lies of man-made global warming to change our way of life for the worse. Social engineering and behavior modification are some of the true objectives being implemented under the guise of environmental and climate protection. Our guest, Pauline Cantwell, has worked with the Peace Caucus NGO at the United Nations and is a host of a radio show, Live Well with Cantwell, on WGCH 1490 AM in Connecticut, where she discusses these topics in depth and runs the website aworldalert.com. Pauline, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
In a previous discussion, you had listed a number of buzzwords that are often mentioned when local politics begin to discuss these issues of Agenda 21, could you go through some of those words to give listeners an idea of what we're talking about?
Here they are. Let's see. Green, green building, lead, sustainable, sustainability. Now, that's directly linked with Agenda 21. Carbon neutral, carbon footprint, as in measuring your carbon footprint, mm-hmm. you can be carbon neutral by buying credits, as Al Gore does. Multimodal transportation, smart growth, smart cars, smart meters, smart grid, smart appliances, unanticipated revenue, pilot projects and programs. So those are buzzwords that link to ICLEI.
You've done a lot of work and research in this area. Can you tell listeners a little bit about what's happening on the local levels of government in this country regarding the Agenda 21 plan and ICLEI?
One problem with ICLEI is the UN had a plan to get all this through at the national level. And, of course, we haven't seen the ability of Congress to get through a cap and trade, or as some call cap and tax, where you would tax carbon emissions, put a price on them, and then set up trading for those. That has been done in the informal sector, but it's not law here. But one thing about ICLEI is it's being passed at the local level. So what they've done is go in and get mayors engaged in the process, and they call them cool mayors, and they move this agenda forward. They also are bypassing the state's power. They're setting up regional programs. So that's very dangerous for a democracy. And ICLEI claims to be a nonprofit organization. In the United States, it actually has 501c3 status. But at the international level, it is a council based in Germany and does not look like a nonprofit to me. They have a hierarchy that doesn't look nonprofit.
No kidding. So the ICLEI, and I want to remind listeners, that stands for the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives.
They changed it to Local Governments for Sustainability, which no longer has any link to the acronym. And I don't know why they changed their name to that. They were originally International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. They claim to be the mechanism whereby the local governments can have access to both the climate change process, the IPCC process, and to conferences like this upcoming conference in Rio de Janeiro in June of this year. And so it gives city mayors, such as Bloomberg, a chance to participate in these international venues. And then it implements these policies of making the cities green, such as bicycle lanes and putting the roads on a diet where you draw lanes for bicycles and different things and take away roads for cars. Because one of the agendas of Agenda 21 is to do away with suburbs, to do away with private housing, to do away with cars, to move into controlled, highly centralized communities. They wanted 1,000 cities to be on board here in the United States in time for this Rio conference. But there has been a backlash. Many cities have pulled out. There were 600 last year in 2009, and this year it's down to 550. Irving, Texas pulled out, College Station, Texas, and they say they realized they were in this international plan that they were not aware of the whole implications of it when they got in it, and they wanted out immediately.
I suspect a lot of the local governments and cities would maybe burn less fossil fuel or lighten their carbon footprint. But with this whole pack, there are things such as social engineering and behavior modification, as we said in the beginning, under the guise of environmental and climate protection. Are those some of the issues that these cities are saying, no, we don't want this?
Yes, I think that's exactly right, that there has become a lot of activism on this issue and some packets made up to teach people on the local level what has happened. And they've actually taken their local documents, laws that have been passed locally, and looked at the agenda from the United Nations and matched wording page by page. And it matches up to the UN language. And so this is often moved forward with city meetings, information meetings, and it's supposed to be an open process and envisioning what you want your city to look like, but it's all moving toward a predetermined agenda. And any naysayers are quickly shut up, moved out of the space, not paid any attention to, not called on. And so they have been able to get it through. And then, of course, the governors are wined and dined and sold the scheme, and the local mayors. So this has been mostly done on a city level.
This is interesting, Pauline, because as you remember, last year when the mayors had that big conference call to round up the Occupy protesters, so it shows the network, the structure already in place with the mayors.
Mm-hmm. There are several different venues, but ICLEI is the main one with access to the United Nations. There's also a group called Cool Cities, and that's under the Sierra Club. But that's the way they get these agendas through, and they make it cool. And who doesn't want to be cool? I mean, everybody does. Who doesn't want to be smart? If you oppose smart growth, then you must be some stupid person. If you oppose smart energy. So it has a connotation that kind of shuts you up from the get-go. And I think all of us want a world that functions better, uses less resources, but do we really want a world where we don't have material resources, where we don't have houses and cars, and a world of actual need for basic, what we consider basic necessities? That's a debate that's not taking place because all this is being moved forward. In fact, Maurice Strong said 20 years ago that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, the use of fossil fuels, electrical appliances, home and workplace air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable. He said that at the Rio conference 2 decades ago.
Can you remind listeners who Maurice Strong is, Pauline?
Maurice Strong was the chairperson of the Rio conference, the conference on environment, the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. He is said by many to be the person who actually controls the United Nations. I don't know if that's true, but he's a Canadian citizen. I think he currently lives in China. He is not officially engaged in the Rio summit at this time, but he will be in Stockholm for a conference starting today, the 40-year follow-up to the Stockholm summit, which was the precursor to the Rio summit. And so when we look at Agenda 21, which is a document that came out of Rio, and that was signed by 178 nations, including the United States, under the Bush administration, we have to go further back. We have to go 20 years further back and look at what came out of the Stockholm summit. And we have to look at the Stockholm documents to see where we're going on all of this. They are talking about ending current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class. So this war is on our lifestyle. It involves redistribution of wealth from the wealthy countries to the less wealthy countries and from the wealthy people to the less wealthy people.
I saw that in the Agenda 21 document. Also, regionalizing local power. They're getting rid of local power, regionalizing power.
Right. They want to do that in Greenwich, in Connecticut. They want to move us into regional governments. And that way, Stamford is becoming the ICLEI city. High-rises and planned communities, and it sits between Greenwich and Darien, New Canaan, but there is some objection to it. We are also in communication and in alliance with Long Island and Westchester County on these programs. So these are being implemented outside the jurisdiction of even the local governments.
I talked with Cindy Bakulis from Long Island Skywatch, and she found online something called the 2030 Sustainable Plan at Brookhaven. She definitely noticed the issues that you're describing now, but also she's starting to notice on the highways, the major highways in certain parts of Long Island, there are barriers being built in the center of the lane so you can't make U-turns. I think traffic is starting to be corralled in a way to keep people going in one direction in case there's some sort of situation to leave and you can't turn around. This agenda is creeping into the lives right now of people in this country. Some cities are fighting back. Some municipalities are saying, no, we don't want this. But you mentioned, Pauline, that they're getting to young people on this. And Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I actually went to a conference in Bonn, Germany in September, and it was our annual non-government conference. I've been at the UN since 94 and have led a peace caucus there since 94 and have gone to a lot of international conferences. However, this one was different. They wouldn't let the young people leave the conference at night and go to the parties. They worked with them. And part of the conference goal, it was sustainable societies, semicolon, responsive citizens. And part of the goal was to train these young people to take to the streets for this agenda. And that is a lot for the Stockholm conference. If you look at the documents there, they are focusing on youth. They are wanting the young people to move this forward. They have educated through the baccalaureate programs across our country to be global citizens, you know, rather than United States citizens, to put global concerns ahead of theirs. One thing that concerns me about the United Nations is this proposal at the United Nations is to create a new world organization and name it the World Environmental Organization, WEO. That would have global legitimacy and mandate to have jurisdiction over what they consider the common goods, and that's fresh water, healthy soil, clean air, but also the oceans, the atmosphere, and diversity of life. Since it would be difficult to implement or trade on any of these common goods that are privately owned or traded on markets. So that would put the United Nations in control of all of this. And then they are talking about putting this in what used to be the Trusteeship Council. So this document states, quote, our proposed WEO should be mandated with a trusteeship function over global public goals and common goods. So the United Nations, the WEO, would become the trusteeship of these goods, these common goods, the atmosphere, the air we breathe, the fresh water, the healthy soil, clean air, and diversity of life, the oceans. I don't think anybody really wants that. And it says, much like a legal guardian is appointed in the case of a person who can't represent themselves, the UN wants to become, quote, the legal voice for the otherwise voiceless environment. And they want to put a price on pollution, a price on everything in the environment, and be able to buy and sell, like buying and selling carbon credits. This document says they intend to focus on the participation of the estimated 1.9 billion youths of the world and their access to various forms of media to implement these goals for the management and equitable distribution of these common goods. So I think the two things that concern me most are the global commons, and then this way that it has been implemented on the local level very insidiously, laws passed taking away our rights as property owners, because one of the things is they don't want private property at all.
We often talk about the aerosol operations on the show. Could you tell listeners a little bit about how that is also connected to this agenda? Because there are fleets of planes that spray aerosols over this continent, but it's not just here. It's all over the world, and you can go online and easily see that. That's something I would want the 1.9 billion young people to understand, that this has been going on for a while. It's not a fail-safe mechanism to cool the planet when they need to do something and be heroes. This is something that's been ongoing for more than 10 years. Can you tell listeners the connection here?
Well, one connection is that our government, the United States government, has been pushing geoengineering as a solution to climate change, to global warming, to block the sun to save the earth. And there are entrepreneurs like Bill Gates who have invested very heavily in geoengineering technology and has bought up many patents on it and stand to make a lot of money if a price is put on CO2, if they can really set up these markets on a big-time scale. So I think a lot of the fear-mongering that's going on about, oh, look, it's so hot. Look at the weather. Look at Snowgeddon last year. Look at this. Look at that. It aids the military in creating weather, in trying out their weather weapons, but it also enables the New World Order to put forward their agenda. It has many applications of putting up aerosols and aluminum, metal particulates in the air marries very well with programs like HAARP, which beams up 1 billion watts of microwave energy focused on the ionosphere and then can be focused any place on Earth to heat up an area, to move the jet stream, and these particulates in the air serve in a very synergistic way with that.
Thank you for describing that in detail, Pauline. I really appreciate that. And as many listeners know, that behind this are some of the wealthiest people in the world that fund these agencies and then make it appear as the citizens' plans locally and even regionally.
That disturbs me because this is a top-down agenda. Much of it conceived 40 years ago in Stockholm, a lot conceived 20 years ago in Rio. And now it's being made to look like a bottom-up agenda, these people taking to the streets and demanding power to the 99% and redistribution of the wealth. So that frightens me. They make it appear that it is a
grassroots
dream of the people. The grassroots want this. The people want this. They have these meetings, and they say, what is your vision? So it's a top-down agenda made to look like a bottom-up people's agenda.
And that's often done by something called the Delphi process. And
that's the way they use it in the town meetings. That's what they've used at the UN. My message was shut up about weather modification, geoengineering at the 2007 annual conference on climate change. I was able to bring Rosalind Peterson in as a keynote speaker, and we did a breakout session on these issues, and I talked on weather warfare. But it was through much blocking at the United Nations because this goes against their what they call anthropogenic climate change. But to me, anthropogenic could be deliberate manipulation of weather. So, you know, I can't deny that man is causing this. I believe wholeheartedly we are causing what we're seeing.
And specifically the military, the U.S. military, greatest consumer of resources, fossil fuel, and pollution.
Absolutely. The military is the most costly of all sectors and the worst polluter worldwide. Nobody can argue that nuclear weapons have caused the most pollution in the world, pollution that will endure for generations. One F-17 fighter jet cruising at just a cruising speed consumes twice as much fuel in 1 hour as the average North American driver consumes in a year.
Whoa.
And they fly at high altitudes, affecting the ozone much more than commercial planes do. And yet military is always off the table at these conferences. It will not be on the table at the Rio conference. I was told early on, don't waste your time. Military is not going to be on the table. It wasn't on the table 20 years ago. And yet the military has wrapped their arms around this climate change agenda. And they're very happy that Alaska is warming and now we can move in and exploit the riches there, the oil, the gold, the natural gas. And they say they're certain that climate change is real.
Oh, yeah. Well, that story where the militaries from various countries are going in to stake out particular areas and regions to exploit resources in the Arctic has been coming up over and over again in the past few years. The article came up last week, and I sent it out to Rosalind Peterson, and she sent me back her compilation of articles from those past couple of years. It's basically just saying the same thing again and again. Usually they're not really stories. It's a photo, and then the story is really the caption under the photo. They don't go into any depth. They're just saying, well, the militaries are appearing in the Arctic region where parts have warmed and they can get submarines in or their ships. And they may be staking out claims of where certain resources will be exposed. So that's the way these stories come out. It's slow. It's relentless, just like Agenda 21. They employ tactics such as the Delphi process, which we'll go into, we'll describe in detail when we take calls. But this is the anatomy of the takeover and the structure of this process. It's good to take note of it. Pauline, you've done incredible work and research, and I know we just scratched the surface of the work that you do, but we're at the bottom of the hour, and we're about to take phone calls. Are you ready to take calls?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. If you have any comments or questions for Pauline Cantwell, call us at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back after this break.
Angel came down from heaven yesterday. She stayed with me just long enough to rescue me. And she told me a story yesterday about the sweet love between the moon and the deep blue sea. And then she spread her wings high over me. She said she's gonna come back tomorrow. And I said, fly on, my sweet angel. Fly on through the sky. Fly on, my sweet angel. Tomorrow I'm gonna be by your side. Sure enough, this morning came unto me. Silver winged silhouette against a child's sunrise. And my angel, she said unto me, today is the day for you to rise.
You're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Pauline Cantwell, and we are opening the phone lines. We're about to take the first call. Hi, you're on the air with Pauline Cantwell.
Yes, hi. This is Zabby from Long Island, from the town of Brookhaven. And in fact, Cindy was correct about this Project 2030 Sustainable Plan in Brookhaven.
Mm-hmm.
We have the bicycle lanes. We have these. This was brought in with the Brian Foley and Steve Fiore Rosenfeld. The Democrats brought this in, the Smart Growth Program. I taped it for public access television. I went to the local library. The local civic groups, Debbie Felber, Diane Cadullo, in these civic groups where the town gives these little civic groups $10,000 each, sort of buys out the civic groups, and they come in and they not only are the mayors bought out, but the civic groups are bought out.
Very interesting. Pauline, that number.
That is interesting.
And it's quite something else, but the Democrats are leading this, especially Steve. They bring in their lawyers, and a lot of middlemen are the people who are benefiting. And I was there, and some people stood up, and yes, they were put down, said as naysayers. They said, who's going to be paying for all of this? So I thank you for this program.
The town meeting that Cindy Pakula's participated
yes,
in?
Yes, this is the town of Brookhaven. Yes. This 2030 sustainable plan. It's been pushed through.
I think I have that on my website. It's really excellent because people were, you know, showed up and called it a UN program, and they denied it was a UN program.
Yes, and so they pushed it through anyway. They've gotten this through.
I sat and watched the whole thing, and I have recommended to people that they take time to sit and watch the whole meeting because it is very interesting.
Is this on video, Pauline? Where can listeners find this?
Well, if it's one I'm thinking about, it's on my website.
Worldalert.com.
Worldalert.com.
Mm-hmm.
The video that
there
I mentioned.
There is a Long Island. Well, I don't know if it's the same one,
but it's not a Long Island meeting.
No.
I actually taped this at a library when they came in and said, this is grassroots, and they asked for your visions. They had the envisioning program, the smart growth,
uh-huh.
all of these trigger
uh-huh.
names. Deceptive, and I pointed it out. It was deceptive right there. And then.
Well, I have an excellent one from Long Island where they're telling people, you know, they're telling they want to build the high-rises and everything out there. And one woman said, well, you know, I moved out here to get away from New York City.
That's
we
right.
We don't want it out here. Go back to New York. You want to go back to Queens. We don't want this out here. And then they said they would take the parking lots at the train station and develop those. And that's part of the places they're listing as unused land. And somebody said, well, where are we going to park our cars to commute?
That's
you know,
right.
You take the parking lots and build condos there, where will the cars go? But this whole agenda is to do away with cars.
I believe it. This sounds correct. One of the council people, Kathy Walsh, has allowed these, I think, condominiums in this place that you wonder, how is the traffic going to flow? And these bicycle lanes are very dangerous because there's on this one road at the 55 miles per hour traffic, we have bicycle lanes. Mm. It's ridiculous.
Yes. They're putting them on highways. There's one on a highway close to my sister's house in San Antonio, Texas, military highway. They're planning a bicycle route from Florida all the way up to Maine, and they had a meeting in Greenwich recently about one on Merritt Parkway, which there's no room to expand Merritt Parkway because of the overpasses.
These developers are coming in, and they're buying the legislators. That's why I have a website called runprimaries.webs.com so that the good people, good rank-and-file people, can come in and win a primary and put these incumbents out of office.
How much would they make a year, Zabby?
And they can make over $70,000 a year with all the medical benefits and the pensions and cars and a staff. They only have to come to work twice a month. Big meetings. And this is in one of the towns. Some of the towns pay more. If you go to my website, runprimaries.webs.com, you can Google Zabby and the word Suffolk for Suffolk County. We're in Suffolk County. That's S-U-F-F for Frank, two Fs for Frank, and O for OK, and L for lucky, and K for knowledge, Suffolk. And my name, Zabby, Z for zebra, A for apple, BB for brilliant, Y for yes. So put that in, and the first hit you'll get is Home Run Primaries.
Zabby, thank you so much for that call.
And thank you so much, Pauline.
Okay, great. Thank you for
the work you're doing.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye, Zabby. Thank you for that call and reminding us of your website and what people can do. There's solutions. Hi, you're on the air with Pauline.
Great show. I love your program. Great guests. I wanted to talk about the new galactic stuff that's going into, you know, space with the private industry. But I did want to clarify one thing. I wouldn't be so sure that those dividers on the highway, you know, there's a lot of idiots out there doing drunk driving, and if they're going 90 miles an hour and they cross over, that's a massive head-on collision. I don't know if that's so much the traffic control that if there's an emergency, but that, I did want to clarify that. I mean, there's even on a Jones Beach path, you know, somebody got hit. And they want to have it open for rollerbladers and bike riders, so they did put up a security divider so a car couldn't careen off.
The head-on is brutal, you're right. And maybe that is the case, yet they're putting shared bike lanes in the same lanes with cars. So it's hard to really say, but I appreciate you adding that in.
Okay, but the main thing is what I always thought of with the space shuttle and what you said about the military. And even just the whole idea of all these rockets, that's got to produce an enormous amount of pollution. And I never realized, you mean the higher you go into the stratosphere and the worse it is for the pollution. And now we have all these big major money people with the galactic space tourism. Doesn't that just provide that much more of a depletion of what's going on? And secondly, what happens if one of these things crashes? Well, what happens if, God forbid, one of these supersonic things are hijacked and flown in like another 9/11, which is a whole other topic you've done?
That's some deep speculation. It's hard to say, but we really referenced the spray planes and the aerosol operations worldwide. That was the connection there as well.
I did want to comment that the space shuttles have been used to do a project called CARE, the Charged Aerosol Release Experiment.
Right.
And so they released aluminum oxide in like the final stage of the rocket launch, the space shuttle launch. And I actually witnessed it. at the final nighttime launch in Florida, I saw this noctilucent cloud being formed.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one formed with a rocket launch from Wallop Island, Virginia, September 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that went right over my house in Greenwich, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
spraying its toxic payload of aluminum oxide. And NASA works with universities, and they create these noctilucent clouds, and they track them as they cross the United States. So those are programs that are going. And in the IPCC documents, it has been noted that these new private space jets, space shuttles, could be used to supplement this spraying program, that you could put this aerosols at a higher level. So that worries me very much. In the early papers, it was suggested that you could put aerosols in the stratospheric level. They would migrate to the polar regions and cause results there much faster.
Listeners, if you're interested in learning more about the aerosol operations, there's an interesting video online.
I think it's right here. Thank you.
Joyce Penner with the University of Michigan. If you just type that in a search engine, aerosol injections for geoengineering, Joyce Penner, University of Michigan. You can watch on video her class. She's teaching young people about aerosol injections into the atmosphere. It's a good thing, and they're going to be heroes to save the planet. We're in trouble, I think. We're in big trouble right here, because the Agenda 21 issue is the umbrella, is the canopy to let all of this exist.
You know, I saw this scary movie where they show these tornadoes hitting L.A. I mean, if the planet is going to get warm, and they showed the Larsen shelf, the ice shelf, just completely melting. If that goes into the Atlantic Ocean, it could disrupt the whole Gulf Stream, and Europe could go into an ice age. Do you see a serious climatic situation, and are they trying? I mean, I've said this before, not to be the devil's advocate, but are they trying to block the sun from warming the Earth, which could create huge hurricanes? And it's even scary what's going on with the climate disruptions and what could be done about it.
Top people in the world believed in the 50s, they started believing, and then certainly moved into it in the 60s, that it would be very good to warm up the Arctic regions for economic reasons. The World Bank president said it would be good because you could produce food there. And of course, the Soviets wanted to warm up Siberia. And so both the United States and the Soviets were engaged in these projects. And when Kennedy ran for president, he agreed it would be a good idea. So these projects were started way back then, and I think what we're seeing now is no less than the results of those actions. And now we have this rush to develop the Arctic, because lo and behold, the shipping channel is open. It's free of ice most of the year. And that's very lucrative for ships to go through there from Russia across to the eastern seaboard of the United
right.
States. And you have oil, you have natural gas, you have gold, you have minerals. And those can be exploited now. And you have the Arctic countries in a race to divide up the riches there. And China is involved also. So I just posted something on my website, aworldalert.com, on some of this Arctic. But I believe it's been done deliberately. And then it's been used as a scare tactic, showing the polar bears, habitat melting. However, it was very cold in Alaska this year.
We have to pay attention to these details as it's creeping along here, and pay attention to the, I guess, perception management effort. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, how you doing, Jeff?
Good.
This is fascinating. You know, this is the first time I've ever really heard anyone, Ms. Cantwell, talk about global warming as not just a end-all and be-all and like almost like a religious thing. Because when I was in the military a few years back, I know there were several projects involved in weather domination and weather control as it referred to the battlefield and improving battlefield environments, or for allowing for better radar and detection and transmission of certain weapons platforms and detection platforms. Two questions I had. Number one, do you know of any running military projects? I know there were a few fledgling projects and a lot of white papers about weather control and release of chaff and other particulate matter to help radio transmission and to block enemy radar, and how that would affect the environment, and also the smart meter and the smart grid.
Yeah.
As far as I know, in New York, a lot of people don't realize that these smart meters have been installed unbeknownst to property and homeowners. And these smart meters emit EMF, electromagnetic pulse, and they can regulate the amount of power that you use. They can monitor what appliances are on in your house. And with future advances in the smart grid with chips inside of certain appliances, they might be able to turn appliances on, to turn appliances off, even direct marketing to people. Say you use your washing machine, they can send you commercials or on the internet about different types of soap. The invasion of privacy is mind-boggling. So I just wanted to know if you had any insights or any information directly on those two topics.
What military were you in? What branch of the military?
In the Army.
In the Army. Okay, well, the Air Force has a paper that was released in 91, I believe, or 96, I'm not sure the date, but owning the weather in 2025.
Yeah,
not controlling, not managing, owning the weather.
I heard of that paper.
And it is believed that the military never releases something for public consumption until they have something far beyond that.
You're right about that.
But that paper details, it goes into great detail. It's thousands of pages long. It goes into Hollywood people they use to create media, to acculturate the people to these ideas. It tells about military operations will become a part of domestic and international security. In other words, they will use it on demonstrations, on the homeland people. We also have a convention that went into force at the United Nations in 1978, and that is NMOD, the convention banning the hostile manipulation of weather and climate.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought about primarily because of the U.S. manipulation of weather in Vietnam, Operation Popeye, where they extended the monsoon season by spraying to create rain and mudding up the Ho Chi Minh Trail and hoping to shut down supply lines.
Yeah.
However, the real reason for the negotiations for that was because the Soviets had created the ability to trigger earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. They came over and briefed our Congress, and we tabled joint resolutions in the Disarmament Commission, and that moved into the General Assembly and became NMOD, the Convention Banning the Hostile Manipulation of Weather, and it's cited as a convention that stopped a weapon from ever being used. The scalar electromagnetic is being used very frequently to create earthquakes and set off volcanoes. It's being done by us. It's being done by many people.
And Pauline, the other question was your take on smart meters.
Oh, and the chaff, they are doing that. And the smart meters, our CIA has asked for funding to monitor the smart meters, and they have claimed success in arresting at least one terrorist by monitoring their smart appliance, probably television, but...
Right.
But just the fact that they can decide when you use power. It's a political control tool that I wouldn't want to give to somebody.
And the technology is, it goes way back to the 80s, I think, where a friend of mine was telling me he installed alarm systems in the 90s, and he was able to remotely tap in through a software program on a computer into somebody's alarm system and to even turn it off, because it was connected to a phone line. Smart appliances, smart meters are connected through wireless microwave technology, and so they can go in. We got another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Curious why nobody's really able to really come against them properly. Like, here you're on the radio, but what is that doing? You know, I mean, how do we really combat these people? How do you combat somebody who believes in their heart that it's all right to kill millions of people because they'll come back in another life? You know what I mean? I'm just curious about that. You know? Well, nobody really talks about the religious aspect behind it. Also, I would like to say, if you can watch Agenda Grinding America Down, that's an awesome video. You should really watch that.
Okay. Thank you for the suggestion. I appreciate that. Pauline, do you want to respond?
Well, I have led a peace caucus at the UN since 1994. I know that they have to deprogram people who have religious beliefs to make them be able to kill people. And I don't care what religion you are. It goes against the tenets of all major religions to kill other people. So there is a, you know, there's a mind programming that goes on with becoming a soldier. And then there's a convincing that certain ways are more humane to kill, such as germ warfare or chemical warfare, were sold as more humane than bombs. And now we have electromagnetic pulse weapons, which can knock out electric power grids and that, but not kill people. I just have a hard time with all forms of military, you know, and I do believe that a lot of this is a spiritual thing, that we do need to get back to a spiritual basis of life, and that we wouldn't be messing up the atmosphere. We wouldn't believe that we have to play God and block the sun, that the sun is bad, that God made a mistake somehow when he made the earth. And I do not believe it is carbon dioxide, because we exhale carbon dioxide and the plants breathe that in. So it is a balance of nature. But we have upset the balance of nature.
Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, Pauline, I have two questions. One is, what is the military budget today, and what dollar amount would you advise the military budget to be, you know, if you could, you know, you were an advisor to the Congress? And the second question is, made a reference to the Merritt Parkway Trail in Greenwich. I thought you said it was something about it being on the Merritt Parkway, but it's actually off the Merritt Parkway, which is
the bike lanes, right?
It's a bike lane in the woods, kind of, and that to me is problematic for a number of reasons. But I sort of got the feeling that you have a problem with bike lanes in general, or I don't know.
No, I have a problem with them taking highway funding and building bike lanes, because they're taking more and more of the highway dollars, and the highways are getting very decrepit. And, you know, around Greenwich, the I-95 gets in serious state of disrepair. But I was not at that meeting. I was out of town. And that is a bicycle lane that's supposed to go all the way from Florida all the way to Maine, you know, bicycle pass.
Yes, East Coast Greenway.
But a lot of what they're doing in cities is putting the roads on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is squeeze the traffic down to one or two lanes in each direction, and they're making more and more toll roads owned by foreign corporations. So they're making it more expensive to drive cars. Truly, the agenda is to do away with automobiles, to do away with ownership, to do away with private housing. You know, it is a socialist agenda.
Pauline, I want to thank you very much and thank the callers very much for the great questions and insightful questions. We're running out of time. We have to wrap things up. And I just want to add that if listeners are interested to find out a little bit more about these conferences coming up, there's one today in Stockholm, the Rio Plus 20, if you put that in a search engine, Rio Plus 20, then you'll find out about the Stockholm Plus 40 conference, international conference that's happening right now. It's going to affect us all. Pauline Cantwell, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate your really in-depth work and following the details on what's going on here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Okay. That'll do it for us. If you want to look at Pauline's work, check out her website at worldalert.com. And we'll see you next week, 10 p.m.
Thank you.